very much. Bob Riley has his own small addendum to, in reference to Whitaker Chambers, and I think he could present that now, and then we'd have a question period. Thank you.
Thanks, Leonard. By the way, I forgot to share with you, reflecting upon Father Shaw's wonderful remarks, the definition of an intellectual or a member of the intelligentsia, as defined by Archbishop Father, you know, who was on television in the 50s, Sheen, Archbishop Sheen. He said an intellectual, I'm both long-term and short-term memory problems now. He said an intellectual is a person who has been educated beyond their intelligence. I think that pertains, as you shall see, to the few remarks I have to make about Whitaker Chambers, whom I love so dearly and whose writings had a huge impact on my life as a foot soldier in the Cold War. I was very taken by a remark which I wish I made, maybe I had, I can't remember. Unless we are told the truth about the past, we cannot be certain of our future. You know, this past fall, when the Pumpkin Papers met, that great organization in Washington which commemorates the Hiss Chambers case, it was the 75th anniversary of Whitaker Chambers leaving the Communist Party. And it was the 85th anniversary of his testimony before the House Committee on Un-American Activities against Alger Hiss. Now I bring to your attention an obituary I found in the New York Times several years ago about the demise of the last chief of the East German Stasi, Erich Milke. Erich Milke was jailed at the old Moabit prison, where warders trying to help his morale, which apparently had slumped after several years in incarceration, supplied him with a red telephone, the kind he had enjoyed as a member of the East German Communist Politburo. Though it was not connected to the outside world, quote, he began dialing and conducting imaginary conversations, a police official said, and soon he brightened up. His other pastime was television game shows. Now, why do I share that interesting anecdote with you? There was a report in U.S. News and World Report last year, in August of 2003, on where Marxism lives today. And it reported, quote, Marx is so entrenched in courses in our universities ranging from literature to anthropology and addressing topics on everything from class systems of Victorian England to the alienation expressed by hip-hop culture that today's students are virtually bathed in Marx's ideas, unquote. It reported the number of Marxist professors in the United States had reached 10,000 by the mid-1980s. Now, what did these professors say? I found this one remark by John Cassidy in an article entitled The Return of Karl Marx, particularly illuminating. He said, Marx's legacy has been obscured by the failure of communism. This somewhat reminded me of Stan Evans's interruption of a little session in which people had been complaining about the way the press had gone off after Richard Nixon, that they just didn't miss an opportunity to tear him down and attack him and subvert him and so forth. And Stan intervened and said, well, you think they did a job on Nixon? Look what they did to Hitler. So his reputation will never recover. Not so apparently for Marx. As another communist theoretician, Louis Althusser, who incidentally murdered his wife, suggested that removing Marxism altogether from the realm of history, politics, and experience would thereby render it invulnerable to any criticism of the empirical sort. On the sort of the more frightening edge of things, we have this interview that Mr. Ignatieff had with Eric Hobsbawm a couple of years ago, in which Ignatieff said to him about the whole experience of the Gulag Archipelago, quote, what that comes down to is saying that had the radiant tomorrow actually been created, the loss of 15, 20 million people might have been justified. Hobsbawm, yes. So there it is. Why do we choose to continue to live within the lie? Why do so many people continue to live within the lie? Regarding the Hiss Chambers case, when the Venona intercepts that have been translated, as well as the latest scholarly work, makes it indisputably clear that Alger Hiss was a communist agent. Poor Alan Weinstein, as you know, has now been nominated to be the archivist of the United States, and his hearings will be coming up, and a number of people plan to punish him for having written his book on the Hiss case, in which he back then definitively proved that Alger Hiss had been a spy. Why? Why, in the face of reality, the overwhelming evidence that Hiss was a spy, do people continue to pretend that this is an open question or even assert the opposite? Well, I believe that maintaining the mythology of the Hiss case is the rationalization that keeps them from the realization of their own complicity with evil. The Hiss case is the red telephone of the American left. They keep calling even when it's disconnected. As Saul Bellow said, a great deal of intelligence can be invested in ignorance when the need for illusion is deep. And it is that illusion, that power of rationalization, which protects their tender consciences from their complicity in that evil. Well, remember, Whitaker Chambers thought he was joining the losing side. That we be sure of our sense of purpose was his definition of victory. And he thought the West's life and death struggle with communism might itself be the means of its recovery. Today, we face something frighteningly similar, as Terry Teachout suggested in his remarks. We're facing a new totalitarian ideology of radical Islamism. And in the face of it, we really do need to ask, are we sure of our sense of purpose? So I suggest, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to reread Whitaker Chambers. And I leave you with the citation for the Presidential Medal of Freedom posthumously awarded to Whitaker Chambers. It read, "The words of Arthur Kessler are his epitaph. The witness is gone, the testimony will stand." Thank you.